Welcome to Cartoon Creators, where we talk to the minds behind the shows that raised us. I'm your host, Tamar Lilienthal, and today we're talking to Jill Causa-Turner. Jill's career began on incredibly successful shows like Stanley, Maya and Miguel, and JoJo Circus, a personal favorite. She went on to write on Little Einsteins, Wow Wow Whoopsie, and for those of you who may have little ones of your own, Jill's most recent credits include being head writer on Blue's Clues and You and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. We talk about her experiences growing as a writer and what it was like to be a woman in kids' TV in the 90s. Ready to take a stroll down memory lane? Let's get to the episode. For people who don't know, Jill continues to do incredible work today on shows like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, I think the new Wizard of Oz, DN Friends in Oz, I saw that you've been on as well. But Jill's work goes all the way back to some of the stuff that I grew up on, like Stanley, like JoJo Circus. That was one of my personal favorites, Maya and Miguel. So your career has been long and incredible, but could you tell us a little bit about your early days? Like, how did everyone's got a path that got them here? So how did you end up in this work?
Well, I always knew I wanted to be in television or film. So when I went to Syracuse University and studied television, radio, and film, and while I loved that program, and I knew I still wanted to be in entertainment, but I was pretty much terrible at almost everything. I was terrible at camera work, directing, sound, lighting. I wasn't good at any of those things. The only thing I really enjoyed and felt that I was good at was writing, coming up with stories for our projects. So over the 4 years that I was there, it just became clearer and clearer to me that I wanted to write, and I wanted to write for kids and families. Of course, back then, there weren't a lot of programs that taught you how to write for kids and families. Most of my classmates were making these dark noir movies, and I was doing silly projects about a grandma who goes on the lam with her granddaughter and all kinds of silly, goofy things. So after I graduated, I really didn't know what to do, but I saw a job listing to be a receptionist at an animation studio called Jumbo Pictures in Soho. So I packed up all my things, I moved to Brooklyn, and I started answering phones. And what was nice about that job was that I had tons of downtime at that front desk. So I got to read lots and lots of scripts. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Jumbo Pictures, but they did the show Doug for Nickelodeon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, of course.
Yes. And they did PB&J Otter. So I got to sit there and just read. They also, you know, they had several other projects. So, and I just started telling everybody, I want to write. I want to write. Anybody who would listen to me, I told them I wanted to write. And then eventually they were starting a new show, and Melanie Grisanti was the producer. And so I interviewed for a PA position, and she gave it to me, and I started working on the show Stanley.
Wow.
Yeah, it was such a cute show. And from there, again, I just tried to learn as much as I possibly could. I would sit in on any meeting they'd allow me in. I tried to get to know the artists, to understand how they were storyboarding, what kind of stories were more successful than others. And I eventually wrote a spec script. And the wonderful head writer at the time, Jeff Kindley, read it and actually said they'd pay me a script fee to revise. I had a lot of revisions to do on that spec script, but a lot of revisions. But they ended up producing it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then The next big stroke of luck I had was there was a fabulous script coordinator, Rob David, who is now a VP at Mattel. He was leaving for another job. And when he was leaving, he was like, hey, you should give Jill the script coordinator job. And he recommended that, you know, he recommended me. And that really started my trajectory for everything. So
wow.
Very, very fortunate and very, very grateful.
No, that's incredible. And I think it's such a, you know, what people often don't realize, well, in general, you know, our listenership, some folks are in the industry and some just aren't, and, you know, love hearing about the shows they grew up on. And it's such a little known fact to folks that aren't in the industry, but first all the kind of different pieces that go into, you know, making the stuff that you watched when you were five. It's really not that simple. But also just how much the industry relies on, you know, word of mouth and people vouching for you. And so that's really incredible. And, you know, so great that someone was able to do that.
Definitely. I think that relationships are a huge part of our industry. And that's one of the things I love so much about our industry. We have a great community, and I feel like we're all looking out for each other in a way. So yes, I will say that over the years, those kinds of recommendations, those kinds of boosts from other people have just meant the world to me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And not to put, I guess, maybe a downer on the industry a little bit, but I'm really curious what it was like to be a woman in the industry at that time, at the time when you were starting out. I think, you know, I've been reaching out to folks to be on the podcast, et cetera, folks who were, you know, working on shows in the 90s and 2000s, early 2000s. And, you know, not to be blunt, but it's a remarkable amount of white men. and that's just the truth of it. So I'm always curious, you know, what was it like to be both, you know, young, and that can come with certain insecurities, but also, you know, working as a woman in the industry when there were less of us at the time.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I was thinking back, and I would say probably 90 or 95% of the head writers I worked with in those early years were men. And it was strange. I got to be in a lot of writing rooms, and sometimes the only other woman in those writing rooms, Susan Kim, would be in those writing rooms too. She was one of those female freelancers I saw so frequently because she was so good at what she did. But I was trying to get into my headspace back then. And I think I always wanted to be a head writer, but it also felt very far out of my grasp for a long time. So I would say for a long time, I thought, and especially because we live in New York and there weren't a lot of writing rooms with staff writers. I know that was the Nickelodeon model, but I was, working on other projects, but, I was like, okay, Jill, you're going to be a freelancer and that is okay. I came to terms with it at one point.
Right.
This is how it is. You're going to freelance. And I was doing pretty well, you know, working on multiple shows. But I would say the first female head writer I worked with was Suzanne Collins on JoJo's Circus. She was on JoJo's Circus for a little while at the very, very beginning. And I was so grateful because she did give me advice and did help me in those early days of my career and would read my scripts and things like that and give me notes. And it was just really nice to have a woman reach out and do that for me. Again, the relationships. And it wasn't until I started working with Out of the Blue on Daniel Tiger in Creative Galaxy that I saw a woman-run company that had lots of women writers and lots of women, like female producers. It was really revelatory.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. I've heard so many people that kind of assume, and that in and of itself comes from certain, you know, stereotypes, right? But that the children's space specifically must be, you know, historically female, because I think that people associate like educational media and anything that like works with children as being sort of a female driven thing. Again, a stereotype of its own. But I've surprised a lot of people by being like, no, historically, that is not true. Like, definitely not. So that's really interesting.
Yes. And it's been nice to see that shift over the years.
Yeah.
And I think that Women in Children's Media made a big difference, which is now Children's Media Association. But I think that mentorship too is a big part of that. It really makes a huge difference, and it's just been one of the nicer parts of my career is just watching this industry evolve and who's involved with it and who's influencing it.
That's awesome. And I must give like a tiny plug. You mentioned that the only other woman in many rooms that you were in was Susan Kim, and we have an interview scheduled with her very soon, so she'll be on the podcast as well.
Tell her I said hi.
will do. So I imagine, you know, that what I'm about to ask is like asking you to pick a favorite kid, but do you have a favorite show that you worked on from your early days, like the early 2000s? Do you have a favorite?
I will say, I think it would have to be Stanley, which was on Disney Junior. It wasn't the gigantic hit that some other shows have been, but it was so cute and kooky. And Jumbo Pictures, it was just this wonderful little time capsule at that moment. The crew was just amazing. I love the artists, the coordinators, the producers, the director. It was just a really magical time. And so many people helped me learn so much. And it was the first time I got to get a taste of what being a part of a production team felt like. And it just got me hooked on kids television and really solidified that this is what I wanted to do. And I really wanted to make a go of kids TV. So it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience with wonderful, wonderful people.
That's awesome. And I mean, that's a great show. It's so crazy sometimes to just think back to so many of those classics, right? And how different in largely in great ways, but how different kind of the landscape of the industry is now. And you know, I wasn't watching Stanley or JoJo Circus on, you know, four different devices, but these days it's a little different. It's a little different. But I guess, you know, on that note, like, so you've had this, you know, longstanding career. You've gone from writing on a bunch of shows to being, you know, a head writer, doing some production work as well. What's the secret is really my honest question, but, you know, how have you managed to write on so many beloved preschool shows and kind of not run dry with the stories? Like, what's the secret to such a long and illustrious career in this space?
Well, you're very kind. I think I pride myself on being a lifelong learner. I really try to keep learning all the time. And I think that if I ever get to the point where I think I've seen it all, written it all, or know it all, I think that would be how you run dry, I think, and start recycling your stories. I also would say that I'm really, really grateful that I get to do this. And I hope that shines through when I'm working with writing teams, production teams. I didn't get my first head writer job until I was 40 years old. So I know what it's like to really have to work hard at things. I know what it's like to hustle. And so I think I'll always have that in me, that kind of fire of, I've got to keep going. I've got to keep pushing. I've got to keep doing something different. And so that's a big part of it. I mean, I wouldn't call that a secret. I think it's pretty basic. And then, like you were saying, those relationships, I really try to treasure the relationships I've built in this industry. And I realize what a privilege it is. It's really amazing that we get to do something that impacts kids and families in such a gigantic way. And we usually get to do it with really cool people. I mean, I met my husband in this industry. I just
no
really
way. Love
it. Yes, he was an editor on Maya and Miguel. And And I will also say I love being a mentor too. I do love communicating with new writers. I like helping new writers. I think that always inspires me too. I think it just watching, again, the landscape change over the last 20 years has been so good for inspiration and for pushing ourselves to do more for our audience. So
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I mean, I love that you met your husband on Maya and Miguel. That's a pretty cool story right there. Not too many people can say that. But I mean, I don't know, maybe other folks have met within this industry, but my husband's an electrical engineer, so we don't do the same thing at all.
I know of actually quite a few couples who met in this industry, and it's again, you're making things that are so personal, and it's such fun work too. That often the people it is a business, but so often the people that you work with, they usually have a similar hearts or missions, or you know, like they. It's very easy to make friends. So I will say that.
No, for sure. Though that actually makes me wonder. I mean, have you ever, over the course of your career, felt kind of the challenge of how personal the work is? I mean, like, you know, people really throw their hearts and souls, and often the stories that people tell in preschool television are coming from sort of like their childhood experiences or like these really beautiful personal places. And then, you know, and I've seen this in my little amount of time in the industry, but then you've got like the network notes and the production team's notes, and that kind of sometimes chip away naturally, as they do, at what an original story might have been. But has that ever been challenging for you?
I mean, you know, sometimes notes are challenging, but they are part of the process. And I always have to remember that we're all working towards the same thing. We want to make the best possible content for kids. I think that, yes, you know, when a show doesn't get picked up for another season, or if a premise that you really worked, sometimes you'll get to outline or even D1, and for one reason or another, the story will get killed. It is personal. And I think that, especially in my early days, I had a much thinner skin. And I would often see notes as, you know, a test, like, oh, I got a lot of notes. I've failed in this script. I'm so embarrassed. But as I've worked on more and more shows, I realized that it's a tool, not a test. It's a way to keep change. You have to make revisions. You have to make a lot of people happy when you're writing a script. You've got to make the network happy. You've got to make the production company happy. You've got to make sure that they can produce it. So I would say notes don't bother me nearly as much as they used to. And I also know that this industry is tricky because you get laid off so often.
Right.
And that was something that I did not understand. And I think that sometimes new writers might not understand that either, where you have a job, you're loving life. This is such a great show. It's so exciting. We're all part of this family, this team. And then the writing ends and people start getting their contracts end. And it's like, wait, you're not going to keep me forever? So I think that that was a big learning curve for me, where I was like, oh, it's like, we love you. We are, you know, we this was great. You're great. But, you know, bye for now. I think just understanding how the business works is important so you don't take those kinds of things so personally.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. So, you know, something else that I am curious about, and we've touched a lot on how kids TV has evolved over the past 20 years. And obviously in really wonderful ways. I think we were talking about, you know, gender diversity, but all kinds of other diversity in the room and on the screen and things, you know, that stories we're telling now that I certainly didn't watch when I was a kid. What ground do you think, you know, still hasn't been covered? Like, what types of stories do you still want to be telling? Do you think that kids still, you know, need to see, want to see? What's your sense on that?
There are always going to be new stories to tell. I think that what I personally have learned over the past few years is that we can tell really complex, we can tell complex stories to preschoolers in really engaging ways. So if we keep challenging ourselves to show different family structures, to show different places, different backgrounds, I think that it's just really important for kids to see themselves on screen. And it's important for kids to see other experiences that are far outside their own, just so we can start planting those seeds of perspective taking and empathy, which are big concepts for little kids, but very, very big concepts. But it's really, we talk about this a lot on Daniel Tiger, is we're planting seeds. We're modeling things that hopefully as children grow up, that will only grow. But I think we can keep pushing ourselves, and it excites me that we have these opportunities now, and people want to see these stories, and people want to make these stories. So it's just a joy. It's really nice, and it keeps me motivated.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I mean, you know, you were kind of working on Maya and Miguel back in the day, and that was somewhat, I'm glad the industry has pushed beyond by this point, but that was somewhat of a groundbreaking show representation-wise in and of itself.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't even know it's happening when you're in it. You know, you're doing this, you're making a show, and then you realize, looking back, I had that same realization just when I was thinking back on, you know, my career the other day. I was like, oh yeah, Maya Miguel was pretty groundbreaking. It's nice to see how far we've come from there too.
For sure, for sure. And you didn't have any, or that you can recall in the spaces you were in, but any kind of pushback on that show at the time?
Not that I recall. I know that, I mean, and I will say I was there in its very, very early days. And then I ended up going over to Little Einsteins before the first season ended. But
got it.
Yes. But again, my husband worked on it for I think the duration of the show. And it felt like people were excited about it. And I know that we had to be careful. Like, I remember in the scripts, we were trying to make sure that we were putting enough Spanish in, but not too much. It was more of a delicate balance, like that I hadn't experienced before. There were definitely a lot of advisors looking at it, which was great. So, I don't remember a ton of controversy or too much pushback.
No, that's good. I mean, that's,
yes.
That's what you want, right? But I, you know, coming off of my chat with Eric Weiner about a show like Dora, where folks were like, she's, you know, here illegally. And it's like, she's a cartoon character, everybody.
Well, we also didn't have as many, we didn't have real social media where we got that kind of real-time feedback.
True.
It was at that point too, which I'm almost grateful for in those early days too, because again, my skin was not as thick. So...
someone wanted to send you like hate mail or a complaint, it took longer in the snail mail than it takes these days.
Yeah, you had to really work for your hate mail back then.
oh man, no, that's too funny. No, that's really awesome. And I think, you know, I'll end on this final question, and I don't know if you have any thoughts, but I asked Eric the same question as well. A lot of the stuff that, you know, was on in the 90s, in the early 2000s, animated and non-animated, frankly, live action as well, has been, you know, rebooted, and there's kind of a resurgence of interest in the past couple of years, all types of spinoffs. And so Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, do you watch spinoffs of things from the 90s and 2000s? Are you a fan of all that's happening? Is it, you know, do you wish you'd see more originals and people would lean on that a little less? Like, what's your take on it?
Well, I was the head writer of the Blue's Clues and You reboot for a season, so
yes.
I pro reboot for sure. I think it's interesting if you can take something that's beloved and again, put a new spin on it, put a new twist on it, figure out how to make it current. I think that's wonderful. And I think that's great. I do hope that we do start investing in more originals again. I know that we're in a very bizarre time in our industry right now, and known entities are often considered the safer bet. But I'm excited for when we start seeing a renaissance in kids' television of quirky new shows with new voices behind them.
That is awesome. I couldn't agree more. And I think what a great place to end off on. We're hoping for a renaissance, like you said, of new shows. And whoever makes another version of this podcast 20 years from now, we'll get to talk about those. So thank you so much. This has been such a joyful conversation. It's always so lovely to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thanks for tuning in to Cartoon Creators. We would love if you connected with us on one of our social media channels. Have a comment, question, or an idea for a guest we should bring on to the pod? Email us at info@cartooncreators.com. Both words starting with a K, of course.